Hello and welcome to Pure Championship, a podcast from Pure Fitbot, purely focusing on the Scottish Championship. My name's Chris Sampson and I'm joined by Cammy Anderson. Hello, Cammy.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing today?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, all good, all good. Glad to be back.
Definitely. We've had a couple of weeks off after an international break and we had the Scottish Cup as well. But we're back to discuss what we had left of match day 15 after the freezing Scottish winter weather claimed a few victims in the pitches at Capello and Somerset this past weekend. We've had a few random fixtures here and there over the past couple of weeks in the Championship, one of them being a Morton win against Arbroath. But let's get into the fixtures from this weekend then. Cammy, you witnessed six goals at East End Park this weekend as the Kevin Nisbet to Rangers rumours reappeared again. The Ibrox side were apparently watching him as he fired in four goals to take him behind Lauren Shankland on 10 league goals for the season as Dunfermline beat Partick Thistle 5-1.
I don't really know what I can say. My first note is actually, wow. Within minutes, we were 1-0 up. Tam O'Ware, who we have sang the praises of quite recently on the podcast, had quite possibly one of the worst defensive performances I've ever seen. Ball comes back to him, he makes a bit of an arse of it, Kilty dispossesses him, and I don't know what O'Ware was thinking when he decided to shove Kilty in the box. Parr's got a penalty, and Nisbet duly slotted home, thankfully. Soon after, we found ourselves 2-0 up. Lewis Martin got himself in on the action from left-back. He was back in at left-back, having played at centre-back quite recently, and I felt he really benefited from the fact that Joe Cardle was the player that Ian McCall decided to take off to enable them to bring on, I think it was McGinty, obviously once O'Ware had went off. After his goal, which was a nice wee run that kind of started at the halfway line, chance of Lewis Martin Ballon d'Or rang around East End. Unfortunately, he didn't win the Ballon d'Or last night, but we can all dream that that might happen one day. We found ourselves 4-0 to the good at half time, and I mean, there's very little I think I could complain about. I don't think there was a single player, especially on the Pars team anyway, that put a foot wrong. Partick, on the other hand, were absolutely abysmal, and as I said to a few folk there, that is one of the worst performances I think I've seen from a team in a long, long time. And I'm going to ask you this: do you think they're as bad as last season's Falkirk?
It's a good question. To be fair, like, I think they have been bad this season, and Ian McCall has really struggled to get anything from them at all. I think we've said this a few times now already. They were obviously poor when Caldwell was in charge at the start of the season as well, but they looked so bad in this one again, for one of the numerous times again this season. So obviously being down to 10 men for the majority of it, but McCall will be absolutely gagging for January, I think. But again, like, a January window is tough as well. Like you say, coming back to Falkirk from last season, I'm sure Ray McKinnon was absolutely gagging for January as well, and it didn't work out in the same way that it potentially might not work out for McCall in January either, because McKinnon, similarly to McCall, they had plenty of time to try and shore things up in the time that they took charge. Obviously, I think McKinnon was a little bit before McCall in terms of the timings of the season, but McKinnon had a lot of the season to turn things around. McCall, come the end of the season, will have had a lot of time to turn things around, and it remains to be seen whether it's going to be possible or not, because right now it doesn't look like it is going to. I keep coming back, obviously they beat Morton a couple of weeks back now, which just looks even more embarrassing when you consider a lot of the results that they've had kind of either side of that since.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on in saying McCall does have a really kind of big task on his hands. I have seen kind of online a few Partick fans suggesting that there could be some deals done for some of his ex-Ayr players. How true these rumours are, I don't know. I don't know if it's maybe just because, as I say, McCall, ex-Ayr, and it's an easy kind of link to make. I've seen Alan Forrest linked. I mean, I think that's just complete nonsense. Forrest would be really stupid, although there's probably a bit of pay packet on offer at Partick. They could well be finding themselves in the third tier next season, so I think it would be a wrong move, especially for someone like him whose career looks to be on an upward trajectory, and he has been one of the best performers this season, and I can't see Ayr letting him go easily if they are to do that.
Aye, that reminds me of like Tidzer from last season as well. So like, for a good few seasons he was one of Morton's best players. Obviously came out that he'd signed a pre-contract for Falkirk and it was being kind of touted to make that move. As they got relegated, it turned out that he had a clause where he didn't need to sign for Falkirk if he didn't want to. But obviously, as you say, that pay packet that he was going to be getting at Falkirk versus what Morton were probably offering him to stay at Capital this season was too strong for him. And he has gone, obviously, and he's been at Falkirk this season. So, again, some of Ayr's players and some of the other players in the Championship might look at that potential and kind of jump at it, because being a footballer is obviously a very short career and you need to make the most of it while you can. But it is weighing that up against staying in the division, winning some football matches and kind of being successful at the end of the day, rather than picking up an easy-ish wage for to play for a very tough time at the club at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So heading back to the game at East End then, just kind of building on what I said regarding Nisbet, two penalties and two quite good finishes from him. I think the Rangers links, going back to that again, I can't really see them coming like to anything really. I have noticed kind of when these Rangers have been watching Kevin Nisbet, there has been Rangers loanees in the opposition team. On this occasion it was Cammy Palmer at Thistle, and I don't know if it's just kind of coincidental and it makes for a much better story rather than writing Rangers watch lone player again. But I mean, clubs I think probably will be taking a look at Nisbet. He is a player that's in good form at the moment, but I can't see the Pars letting him go unless for a very decent fee in January. A wee quirky stat that I'd seen online, Nisbet this year is the highest scoring Scotsman in the SPFL with 27 to his name, which is two more than Dundee United's Lauren Shankland. So I think it just kind of goes to show how good he is. Granted, the majority of those goals did come at League One level, but it's clear to see that Nisbet is a player that has potential and could be someone that goes far.
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at the parallels between Nisbet and Shankland as well. Obviously, Shankland had a very good season for Ayr, League One level, and then made that step up as well last season for Ayr, and then has stepped up a level again for Dundee United this season. So, no, I don't think there's any doubts that Nisbet has the potential to do the same. And obviously, in this one, he'll be delighted to get four goals against the team that kind of let him go, as they were maybe cutting some costs when they got relegated.
Yeah, I mean, I think he certainly had a point to prove, and he certainly proved it when he absolutely battered them, that it seemed like however many shots he took, everyone was going to end up in the back of the net. We did decide to take him off after 50 minutes. Personally, I'd like to have seen if he could have got that double hat-trick. I think that's only ever happened once in Pars history before. But it wasn't to be, and we still won 5-1, so I'm not really going to complain there. I am, however, going to complain about Cammy Gill and his continued problems with free kicks. Thistle's goal came from what must have been about 35 yards out. Rhys Cole I don't even think it was that good of an effort, but Gill once more has made a complete hash of it, much like Dundee United a few weeks back when he let in one from Nicky Clark with very little kind of resistance to it. I just felt his positioning was all a bit off, and ahead of the January transfer window, goalkeeper would be a position that I'd be looking to strengthen, especially given Ryan Scully's recent concussion. He might be out for a good few weeks, so I certainly think we need another keeper in, because the younger boys, while they may be alright for reserve games, are certainly nowhere near ready for first team level.
You can have Sam Ramsbottom if you want. I think he might be going.
No thank you.
I just want to touch, let's talk about the penalties again, because obviously they were turning points in this game, and especially the first one. I've watched the slow-mo replay a few times now. I don't genuinely think that there's much contact at all in this.
I don't think there is much contact, but I think the second you lift your hands, and even the slightest bit, you can see he's pushed him, but soft, maybe. I was kind of sat at the corner flag, so I did see it kind of side on. He definitely touched him. Yeah, it was soft, but well done for Greg Kilty for kind of taking advantage of that, and poor from O'Ware for kind of biting, because, I mean, he could have left it and Kilty would have put it in just as easy. But yeah, I guess you can understand O'Ware might have wanted to take the chance with, oh, the Pars could miss the resulting penalty. But at the same time, he was always going to get sent off for it and ultimately cost his team on the day.
I thought there was a double jeopardy rule now where it couldn't be a red and a penalty conceded at the same time, or am I just making that up?
No, that was something that I'd thought at the time, but it's one of those, much like the kind of handball rules at the moment, I think it is kind of open to interpretation, and all referees have their kind of different ways of applying this rule. But I mean, I think there wasn't much doubts about it. He didn't make any attempt to go for the ball. He did, fair enough, if he'd maybe stuck his leg out and caught him or whatnot, but no, not when you're kind of pushing someone, I don't think.
Yeah, it's basically like 6 yard box by the time the kind of shove happens as well. Like, Kilty's literally just about to pull the trigger, I think.
Exactly. So, and as I say, he'd been as well just letting Kilty do it. He could have kept it on. It could have been an entirely different game if Partick stayed with 11 men, but we'll never know. So,
turning point of the match after 4 minutes as well, so yeah, totally. What about the second penalty then? Again, I'm not just saying this to argue with you, but I genuinely think this is a bit of a dodgy one as well.
Oh no, that was far dodgier than the first one. I think Nisbet does very well, if memory serves me correct, to get in front of the man who kind of goes to clear the ball. He catches Nisbet instead. I think that's, as I say, really smart play from Nisbet. Soft, yes. Penalty, probably yes as well, and thankfully put that home. So I've kind of said throughout the podcast, I feel we've been quite unfortunate with penalties. We've had several given us against us in kind of really dodgy circumstances. A few, looking back to that very first game against Dundee, there was those dodgy penalties, but yeah, it's about time they kind of, we got lucky, and thankfully we managed to take full advantage of it.
Yeah, fair dues. And like you said as well, obviously Nisbet went off relatively early, but still Dunfermline could have added to the five that they got. I think Kilty could have had a sixth goal, maybe Andy Ryan could have had a seventh, and then I think Martin had another chance as well. So this could have even been more embarrassing for Thistle, and fair play to any Thistle fan that actually stayed for the entirety of the match as well. I think we saw some pictures of some of them leaving and going to the pub pretty early on Twitter and things.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly wasn't many of them left, and credit to them, because that wouldn't have been me sitting there watching that, because that was absolutely terrible. Kind of going back to the Pars then, I want to give a wee shout out to Tom Beedlin. Beedlin's a player who's kind of been in and out of the team this year and hasn't really found form, but the past few weeks he kind of has stepped up, and he looked much like the kind of Beedlin that came in from Sunderland. He just looked a lot better, and I'm interested to see, now that Joe Thompson's back, he made his return to first team action off the bench. Didn't do an awful lot, but for a first appearance in 7, 8, or maybe even 9 months, I can't quite remember when that injury was, I'm interested to kind of see how they get on together. Paul Payton did come off at about half time. I can see him kind of getting phased out the team. I can understand his use in certain games, but I think in games like this where we are on the front foot, I don't really think he's got a place in the team. If we're able to batter teams, I'd rather we could batter teams rather than relying on Payton, who, for all his kind of good passing he's got a real lack of mobility, and I'd rather we kept him back for games when we are kind of under the cosh and needing an extra body at the back. But yeah, very little complaints other than obviously the ones I've made earlier on about the game, and just got to hope that we can continue this form, because the win came at quite an important time. Pressure appeared to be building on Crawford again. We'd lost Isle in our last league match, and then quite embarrassingly lost to bottom of League One Stranraer in the Scottish Cup. But Crawford once again seems to have pulled it out of the bag. It just remains to be seen how long it's going to go on for.
Yeah, talking of pressure on managers, let's move on to Dundee 1, Queen of the South 2. Stephen Dobie downs Dundee in added time. Is James McPake in trouble? A few weeks ago, they were going into the Dundee Derby as one of the form teams in the division, but the cracks have kind of reappeared again after three straight defeats now, obviously including this one. From the highlights in this one, I thought Dens seemed really flat. You could basically hear a pin drop for the most part, and they were obviously booed off at half-time and full-time as well. What do you think?
I think McPeak's absolutely under pressure. I mean, as you say, three straight defeats, and going from the highlights, I mean, any time we did hear noise from that home crowd, it was mostly quite a lot of hugely expletive phrases. I'm not going to repeat a lot of the ones that were caught on the highlights, but I mean, yeah, he needs to get things sorted sooner. He's going to need to be out the door. They're kind of at risk of falling out of the playoffs. A few teams have games in hand and whatnot with all these kind of games called off, and whilst they could have really pulled away and cemented themselves in the playoffs, they've done anything but, and really risk falling out of the playoffs. In fact, they could fall out tonight, I think, if I'm not wrong. So
yeah, you're right there.
It just wasn't great from them, and yeah, there's not a lot to say. I think you look at the first half, they did kind of dominate those early proceedings. Queens defended particularly well, I thought. They were very deep and defending narrow too, which kind of stopped Dundee from doing anything really, but this still didn't stop them trying to keep ploughing into that middle, which was bizarre. Surely in that situation you want to make the most of your wide men, such as Declan McDade and whatnot, and get the ball, get loads of crosses in, rather than just keep pushing at a brick wall. It was a wonderful goal from Stephen Dobby to open the scoring. I think Finlay Robertson could have done a bit better there. Dobby went past him with ease and then finished really well from outside the box.
Yeah, I thought, coming back to Dundee, they had obviously had the majority of the possession. I thought they really tested Robbie McCrory for the full 90, to be honest with you. But then coming on to the first goal, great finish from Dobby, like you said. Darren Brownlee, I think it was him that strode out of defence, kind of unchallenged as well. Just simple pass into Dobby's feet, who kind of squeezes past a couple of markers, and yeah, like you said, great finish into the bottom corner, kind of low driven drive with his left foot into that right hand corner, and no chance for Hamilton. And I think Queens were kind of back to their form in that kind of middling part of the season that we've had so far. Battling all over the pitch and creating some really good chances as well, and differently to Dundee, kind of testing Jordan Hamilton on numerous occasions rather than maybe not troubling him like Dundee with McCrory.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually going to, after what you said about McCrory, I can't not shout this out. I mean, when you see the highlights, he made an absolutely outstanding double save.
Yeah,
Hemmings kind of gets a shot in from quite close, maybe just about the penalty spot. And the ball, it was one of those saves, he does well enough to stop it, but I don't know kind of if the spin on the ball's done so that, but the ball kind of loops up and over him. It looks like it's going to be one of those embarrassing goalkeeper kind of mistakes that you see on those rubbish Christmas DVDs. But, I mean, out of nowhere, like a cat, flips over and manages to just flick it away, and it was a really good save from him. And, I mean, that's all he really had to do all the game. I mean, I don't think he could have done much about Danny Johnson's strike right at the death, and I mean, that looked like he'd secured Dundee a point, but in Dundee fashion, it wasn't, and Queens managed to get themselves a win after an absolutely wonderful mistake by Jordan Foster. I mean, I don't know what he's thinking. I'm not sure if the ball's just came to him and he wasn't expecting it, or if the ball's just been trapped in his feet. I really don't know, but when you've got someone like Stephen Dobby chasing you down, you can't be affording to make those mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, 9 times out of 10, if you've got your concentration, you're heading that away. But Forster chooses to kind of chest it and then attempt a pass. Like you say, Dobby sneaks in, brilliant dinked finish over Hamilton as he's kind of rushing out. It's just a shocking bit of defending that, like we said earlier, just heaps more pressure onto James and Pick. And there's literally seconds between those goals as well. Like Danny Johnson's brilliant finish, like you said, one of, I think, the, and with the Hemmings chance as well, one of like the two shots of target that Dundee had in the whole match. Cammy Kerr's obviously telling the Dundee players to get back into position, and then seconds later they're conceding the goal that loses them the match. And it's just, as a manager, McPake's going to be raging at that, but you can't coach those things. That is down to the players for me, and it's just losing that concentration for that split second, and they've lost a point from it, and a probably a vital one, obviously getting that equaliser or supposed equaliser so late in the day as well.
Yeah, as you say, I don't think McPake can exactly be blamed for that final goal. Obviously he is the one who's going to get his kind of knuckles wrapped for throwing away what would have been, as you say, vital points. I really don't know where they can kind of go to sort things out. I don't know if it is a case of McPake's had his chance, but you've got to remember he's a young manager. I don't know how much kind of influence Gordon Strachan's having on him, but I really don't know. It seems to be every few weeks we're praising him like he seems to have got things going well, and then a few weeks later it just seems to be like he's not got a clue. And I can see a lot of parallels kind of there with Stevie Crawford at Dunfermline. It just seems to be, I think it just highlights that's what you're going to get with young managers. But especially, I think the main glaring difference here is Dundee have huge huge amounts of money in comparison to my pars and have far bigger expectations and will be looking to go right back up. And if they find themselves struggling to do that, I don't think they'll think twice about sacking McPaik if they need to.
Yeah, I think it's probably a good idea to make the comparisons to Dunfermline and the two managers. I think if you look at the records this season, they just kind of speak into just exactly what you just said. Like, Dundee obviously won 6, lost 6, drawn 3. Dunfermline won 5, lost 5, drawn 4. So it's so up and down on almost a weekly basis. Obviously Dundee have had a good run and then followed by this really bad run. Dunfermline seems to be a little more up and down on a weekly basis. So I think when you're those clubs, and Dunfermline, again, you might not agree with this, but I think in terms of the league, they've probably got a decent budget. If you're comparing it to the likes of Alloa, Arbroath, probably Queen of the South, a bit of Morton as well, like, Dunfermline have a decent budget for the league, potentially even more than Ayr, and they'll be expecting to hit the playoffs as well. But with Dundee, when it comes to that, I think they, like you say, they are looking for promotion, and they'll want at least to be in that second spot come the end of the season, so they don't have to play as many games in the playoffs. And if they don't get that, even if McPaik has gone before then that manager is going to be under pressure as well, whoever comes in after McPaik, if that does happen.
I think you're quite right there in saying about the Pars budget. I'd say we probably are about the fourth or fifth biggest. I think it's probably between ourselves and Partick for kind of that fourth spot. Obviously, top spots are dominated by Dundee United, Dundee, and then I'd probably say Inverness. I'm interested to see how this one plays out in the kind of coming weeks and stuff, especially with the January window approaching. Dundee brought in a lot of new faces and massively overhauled the squad that got them relegated. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if McPaik wants to try and change things or if he'll even be given that chance.
Definitely, yeah. Let's move on to our final match of this past weekend, and that was Alloa 0, Inverness Caledonian Thistle 2. Inverness moved into second place with this comfortable win over Alloa. It's actually the third time that they've played each other already this season, with at least another 3 to go after they were drawn against each other in the next round of the Scottish Cup as well. One of my pet hates of the Scottish Football League system, but that is probably for another podcast and another time. Cammy, talk about this one.
So yeah, this was quite a fun game to watch actually. The first half especially was a really end-to-end match, and Inverness manager John Robertson said as much post-match. And I mean, Alloa, I think it could have been a completely different game. Alan Troughton missed a golden opportunity early doors, ball kind of got whizzed across and he missed from only a few yards out. I'll give him a wee bit of, I'll cut him a bit of slack I should say. It was quite a difficult thing to get. I don't know how kind of ready he was for that, but I mean, if he scores that, it's a completely different game. Yeah. I mean, seconds after that again, the game could have been completely changed. Cole Donaldson appeared to shove Alan Trout in. Alloa made a big deal of this in their highlights, zooming in slow-mo and the whole lot of it. And I think Inverness can be considered really, really lucky that they didn't concede a penalty. They could have been 2-0 down after all of about 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, did you think it was a penalty? I thought on second viewing it was just outside the box and that kind of zoomed in slow-mo.
I was going to say that actually. It was kind of... Nah, I'm not too sure, but I think certainly a foul if it was definitely just outside. But
aye, if we're given the fouls in the Dunfermline Thistle game, and then I thought this looked like a foul as well, but maybe more of a free kick than a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a camera from the side that might make things a bit clearer, but either way, it would have been a golden opportunity for Alloa to perhaps get themselves in front and on the front foot. They tried and tried throughout that first half, but I thought Mark Ridgers was absolutely superb, made several saves at kind of full stretch. And I mean, kind of near the end of the game, near the end of that first half, Alloa's concentration levels just kind of dropped and they went and conceded twice.
Yeah, definitely. I think Inverness looked kind of took control after that and looked pretty dangerous. I think Carl Tremarco, Cole Donaldson missed a couple of good chances. James Keaton had a decent shot after a lovely kind of move on the edge of the penalty area. Is Scott Taggart's goal the best own goal that we'll probably see this season?
I think it probably will be. This was very unfortunate. The ball comes over and he heads it. I think McDonald's thinking he's going to leave it, runs out, and obviously Taggart's completely unaware, heads it back, and if McDonald's nowhere near it, the ball kind of trundles into the back of the net, and I mean, it's certainly a slow one to take, and perhaps Salah kind of weren't deserving to concede this goal, and it certainly changed the game, and Boyd Inverness on to get that second goal just minutes later through Aaron Dorn.
I mean, Target's goal is another one. You're talking about shocking Christmas gaffes DVDs. I think that's definitely one of those for that. But Doran's goal is definitely, I mean, I thought it was good enough to maybe be on a bit of a highlights reel at the end of the season. I thought, I've mentioned him a few times now over the last couple of podcasts, and I think he's definitely got the ability to be the game changer for Cali. 2-2 for him now as well, in terms of their matches. And I thought it was a really good goal from him.
Yeah, it was a really nice half volley, and as you say, he's someone who is a difference maker on his day, and he done exactly that when at Alloa on Saturday. So I think Inverness can certainly be happy with the points they've got, as you said in the intro to this match, now up to second place, and I mean, I think they'll be looking to continue building on that and see maybe they might live up to that expectation. And you said in maybe the first or second podcast that you think they could win the league. Well, they're getting closer.
I know. I think looking back on that, obviously they have had some kind of poorer results since then, and Dundee United have not continued to find a bit of form. I think they've won their last five now in a row, and kind of still haven't drawn a game this season as well, which is pretty unique for this league. But yeah, I quite enjoy watching Inverness play. I think they're a good team. They've got that good solid core at the back as well, obviously Donaldson and McCart, Tremarco's there, and then Sean Rooney again I thought was pretty good in this one. He was kind of bombing down that right hand side. And yeah, if we're talking about Alloa, Liam Dick has returned from injury over the last couple of weeks since we've done a podcast, but his challenge here for the red card was a shocker for me. I think James Keatons is alright, but he did go off. He did get subbed off after it, although I think it was maybe 10 minutes or so after, but it looked a really bad one for him, and a definite red card for me.
Yeah, I've absolutely no complaints about it. I mean, it was an absolute horrid tackle, and I think Keatons, it's very lucky it wasn't anything worse. Dick went right over the ball, and it looked a real ankle breaker. On another day, that could have been a really, really sore one for Keatons, who is, if I'm not wrong, only just recently come back from an injury. So yeah, Inverness will certainly be glad that it wasn't anything worse, and hopefully he's not out for too long if there is kind of any injuries there.
Yeah, hopefully not. Even when Alloa went down to 10 though, I think they still had plenty of chances to get back into this one. Like you said earlier, the game was an enjoyable watch. It was end to end, plenty of chances for either side. Inverness just had that little bit of extra quality to pick up the win in the first half, and Alloa didn't really test Mark Ridgers kind of nearly as much as they should have done for some of the chances that they were creating.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think in the second half, I can only really recall Kevin O'Hara coming close. I think he'd kind of flashed one across the goal, and I think it maybe took a wee nick off the post or whatever. But I mean, other than that, it just kind of wasn't the same for them in that second half. And I mean, they're going to want to get things kind of sorted quickly, because that's now them just won in the last seven, and that run's also contained four defeats, including that one on Saturday. And yeah, I think they can be very thankful Partick are continuing to be so horrific. I think they're now level on points, and I mean, Alloa, as we've said, Alloa aren't aiming to reach the promotion playoffs or anything like that. I think they'll be quite happy with mid-table. If they finish ninth, I think they'd be quite happy as well. They could probably take whoever's in the League One playoffs. But as we know, they're a team who can really, really do well on their day, and on many occasions, they just don't seem to kind of get out as much as they put in.
No, I agree with you there. I think for a lot of this season so far, I've actually enjoyed watching quite a few of Alloa's matches. They do play really well. They put in, massive cliche, but 110% effort in every single match. They have had some bad results, and they've kind of folded in a few. I'm talking that Ayr game a few weeks back, where it was, I think it was 4-0 after about half an hour. But they have had some brilliant results as well, talking about the Dundee United win at Recreation Park as well. So yeah, I don't worry about Alloa at all. I think they should be fine if if Thistle continue the way that they have been so far. But obviously we don't know what's going to happen come January, because come January as well, I think Alloa will probably be looking at another few recruits. I think Peter Grant might change his approach in terms of that short squad that he's worked with so far in the first half of this season. I think they'll be looking to get a few more bodies in.
Yeah, I think we'll need to, we've spoken on the lack of squad depth quite a lot. As we've said, Peter Grant did kind of say he wanted a smaller team, so he had everyone playing. He didn't want to be wasting money on people who weren't playing. But I mean, I think in this league, with how close it is and stuff, I think you kind of do need those extra bodies who can offer you something a bit different. Alloa, I wouldn't say I went stale or anything like that, but I think they do kind of need an injection of just something a bit fresher that might kind of change their fortunes in that second half of the season.
Yeah, I agree there, definitely. That's us for that weekend. We do have a match tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday, although it will have already happened by the time I manage to edit the podcast and get it released. Cammy, your Dunfermline side are away to Ayr. Are you confident?
Yes and no. I mean, we're coming into this match off of a 5-1 win. Confidence is obviously going to be high, and we of course beat Ayr we came from behind to beat Ayr at East End only a few weeks ago with that Lee Ashcroft wonder goal. So I mean, in that regard, yeah, I am pretty confident. You've also to remember that Ayr haven't played for a good few weeks now due to firstly postponing the game that's getting played tonight, and then due to Scottish Cup, and then the game being postponed at the weekend there. So I think there could be a kind of chance for the Pars to take full advantage of Ayr maybe being a wee bit lacking on the match fitness and kind of stuff like that. But everyone knows how good Ayr are. They'll just want to get back to winning immediately and carrying on what has been a good season for them so far.
Definitely, yeah. Let's move on to the weekend's matches then. We've got Queen of the South at home to Partick Thistle first off. Thistle obviously coming off the back of that shocking performance that we've talked about quite a lot at the start of the podcast. Home win here surely, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I'm fully expecting the further misery to be piled on Thistle. A few weeks back they played, I think it finished 1-0 to Queen of the South at Fir Hill, and many have called it one of the worst games of football they'd ever seen. I don't think it's going to be like that this time. Stephen Dobby's kind of now found form. That's that was two goals at the weekend, which, I mean, we've said a few times now, he just kind of needs to find that scoring knack again, and I think they'll be absolutely fine on Saturday. I can't see Thistle doing anything to really trouble them.
I agree there. I think we've got Dundee United at home to Alloa. Again, probably a home win, but talking of Alloa, we just have, you never know what you're going to get from them.
Yep, I mean, I've got it down as a United win just solely because they are at home, but as we mentioned, Alloa did shock them. Well, I'm saying shocked. They fully deserved that win, yeah, a few weeks back against them, but yeah, need to wait and see. United have tended to kind of underestimate these, and I feel bad saying this, and I'm in no means disrespecting them because of their part-time status, but lesser teams, they done the same against Arbroath and very nearly were made to pay for it, and obviously did pay for it when they done it against Alloa. I think United will take a different approach to it than they did last time, and yeah, I think they'll probably win it, but it won't be easy for them.
Definitely. We have Arbroath at home to Dundee. I think a win for Arbroath here would jump Dundee, which is, again, we've talked loads on the podcast so far about how good a season Arbroath are having, and that'll just hit at home even further if that does happen this weekend.
Yeah, I fancy Arbroath to take them this weekend. Dundee are in really poor run of form. We've spoken many a time on how good Arbroath kind of are at home and the problems they've caused for, well, everyone really. I think they'll probably edge this one.
We've got Ayr travelling up to Inverness to play Cali Thistle. What are you thinking for this one? I think if Ayr get back to winning ways tonight against Dunfermline, I think they could definitely be looking to kind of cement second place in this one, and because if they win tonight they'll jump Inverness back into second, and a win at the weekend as well will kind of propel them a bit further towards Dundee United.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really, really tight one. The last time the sides met, Ayr went in kind of full of confidence. I think Inverness ran a wee bit of a dodger in the form, but they ran out 2-0 winners when they were at Somerset. Mm-hmm. As I say, I think it's going to be a tight one. I think this has got a draw written all over it.
It's probably a fair result there and a fair shout. And finally, we've got the pure championship derby. It's Dunfermline at East End Park against Morton. I've got no idea what's going to happen in this one. Morton, albeit, like I said at the start of the podcast, did pick up a win at home against Arbroath since we've last done a podcast, but they also struggled to a 1-1 draw against Highland League leaders Brora, and are probably going to get put out the Scottish Cup in the replay tonight against them away from home. So, no idea what's going to happen in this one.
I'm the same as you. I went into the match against Partick there really unsure of what to expect. We have done quite well at home, but obviously those two losses in recent weeks did kind of have me quite concerned. I feel kind of similar coming into this match, although I think that's us now won 4 in the bounce at home. It's one of those, I really don't know, it could go either way. I'm just really hoping that it's not an absolute stinker like it was last time round at Capello.
I think obviously Morton's away form comes into play here. It has been shocking and it continues to be shocking. Could be a Dunfermline win, but I'm obviously always hopeful that that's going to turn around eventually and we'll start kind of moving up the table a little bit after being stuck in that eighth spot for a good few weeks now.
For your sake, I hope it does kind of turn round. I also want to continue doing the podcast past this season. I just don't hope it happens this Saturday. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing how it goes and looking forward to all the action.
Definitely. We'll be back next week. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to us returning this week. And we'll see you next time. Cheers, Cammy.
Cheers.